This is Hash It Out with Jane
is a podcast that supports independent thought, personal responsibility, and social consciousness. My name is Jane Hash, and I want to thank you for downloading this very special episode of Hash It Out with Jane. My guest today has served almost 30 years in prison for a rather sketchy marijuana smuggling charge. He's been featured in the documentary film Square Grouper and is the author of the Black Tuna Diaries. After this brief message from our sponsor, I'll be right back with Mr. Robert Platschern, and we'll find out how he's spending his retirement years while under the watchful eye of the law.
You already know that you can be making additional income by selling items on eBay, but do you know the inside secrets and tips that will allow you to achieve your maximum success? If not, you need personal instruction from eBay-certified expert Robin Hyatt. Robin is one of 38 people in the world trained directly by eBay as a certified eBay education specialist. For over 10 years, Robin has coached eBay sellers, helping them generate hundreds of thousands of dollars in sales from the comfort of their own homes. She can help you too. Robin offers her affordable consultation services on-site, online, or by phone 7 days a week. Act now and learn the secrets of eBay success from certified eBay business consultant Robin Hyatt. To find out more about how Robin can help you start making money on eBay, visit her website at auctionsalestraining.com. That's auctionsalestraining.com.
Robert Platschern, am I saying your name correctly?
Yes, you are.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you spent 30 years in prison for moving large quantities of marijuana, yet you were never actually caught in the act?
I spent just about 30 years in prison, the longest sentence of anyone in America for a nonviolent marijuana offense. And I was convicted of smuggling marijuana. A lot more than I actually smuggled, but that's not unusual. I spent time in 11 different federal prisons, from the Supermax at Marion, where Gotti died, and at the time it was the only Supermax in the country, all the way down to the camp at Eglin, and in a lot of medium and high security prisons.
Isn't that generally where they keep, dangerous criminals?
Yeah, but whenever they want to justify a long sentence, they make all sorts of allegations, none of which were actually part of the court proceedings. And they sent me to Marion because they listed sophisticated criminal activity and wide publicity. Now, that's kind of a lame reason to put someone who's never been in jail into the highest security prison in the United States, and very definitely the most dangerous. But they do things like that. They've done it to a few other people. At the time, I took it personally, but in retrospect, you've got people now who are doing life without parole for exactly the same conviction I had, which is for marijuana under the Kingpin Law, 848, Continuing Criminal Enterprise. So in some ways, although it sounds strange for someone who was in prison for 30 years, I was fortunate I got out. There's still a dozen people in federal prison who, at least in theory, will never get out unless the law has changed. And that's one of my goals, to make sure the law is changed and that those people do get out. But when I got out of prison 5 years ago, activism wasn't high on my list of things to do. I had written a book during my last year in prison, a memoir called Black Tuna Diaries. And it took me about a year to teach myself how to use a computer, because when I went to prison, the only computers were in clean rooms in big companies, and they operated with big, heavy rolls of tape. So I had to teach myself to use a computer, and I had to support myself at that time. So I went back to being a pitchman, and I was pitching nonstick cookware in big box stores all over the South. And after a year, when the book was in shape to be published, I went on the road on a book tour. And the first was the normal annual convention that was out in Seattle at the time. I was a guest of High Times. I had already written several articles for High Times and was getting ready to do a column for High Times. So I went out there, and for someone who had pretty much just gotten out of prison, to see the California scene out in, it was in San Francisco, and to see people out on the plaza standing around doing their medicine was pretty shocking and slightly frightening. I took one look at 150 people out there puffing away, and I had come out to smoke a cigarette. So I got as far away from them as I possibly could, because I figured any second the joint's going to be raided. And of course it wasn't, but it took a couple of days to get used to that and appreciate what they had out there at the time. It was a couple of months later when I first started to think about actually being active and helping to change the law. I live in a very conservative senior community in South Florida. I made it a point of not particularly letting people know who I was. But once the book had come out and the movie was announced, you know, they made a movie called Square Grouper, which has been on Showtime, and it's on iTunes and Netflix, and people began to know who I was. And one morning when I was out playing tennis, a man in his 70s approached me and said, "Can I talk to you for a minute?" I said, "Sure." He said, "Bobby," he said, "my wife has MS. She's bedridden. I spend most of my time taking care of her. But occasionally she has a good day." I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, when I can find her something to smoke, most of the pain goes away. She can get up, she can move around. I can take her to lunch and she can have her hair done. And it's just a whole different world when she can find something to smoke." He said, "I'm afraid to go out on the street looking for something, because I could be arrested and then who would take care of her? Or I could be robbed," he said, "or I don't know what I'm buying." He said, "Can you help me?" And I looked at him for a minute and I said, "You know, I'd really love to, but no, I can't." I said, "If it ever got out that I sent you to someone, gave you a name, or helped you in any way, I'd go back to prison for 10 years because I'm on probation, parole." And it broke my heart to have to say that to him. And so I started to think, what's the solution? And a couple of days later, a woman came over and she said, "I know who you are. I want to talk to you." She said, "I have glaucoma and I've been losing my sight." She said, "I've read about people with glaucoma who've used marijuana to save their sight." She said, "I don't want to be blind. Please tell me where I can get something, because I have no idea." And I said to her, "I wish I could, but do you have any grandchildren?" She said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, you're asking the wrong person." And she got the message. But it made me really want to do something. And the only thing that could be done that would help those people and everyone else in this state and in the country who needs it and can't get it is to help change the law. So I began to think about, what can I do? I really don't have any money, but I have a talent. Before I went to prison, I was one of the highest paid pitchmen in the country. If you've read my book, you know, the famous pitchman, Billy Mays, the guy with the little beard who used to do Mighty Men Did, OxyClean. Billy and I started on the same place and on the Atlantic City Boardwalk, where we trained to be pitchmen. And when Billy found out that I was out of prison and writing a book, he asked to write a dedication. And he said, Bobby Platchon's a legend in the pitch business and one of the greatest there ever was. Well, I am pretty good. And I sold an awful lot of pots and pans and Vitamixes and Ginzu knives. I was making infomercials on television before Ron Popeil ever heard the word. In fact, I worked with Ronnie for years out on the fairs. In any case, I said to myself, self, how can you use that talent? And I was out at Hemp Fest in Seattle. I was up on the stage, and I had about 2,000 people in front of me. And they were sending me up tremendous love and clapping, laughing at my jokes. They loved to hear my smuggling stories. And I looked out, and I just had an epiphany. I stopped dead. And I said, you know, I'm wasting my time here. I said, it's fun talking to you, but I'm preaching to the choir. And in terms of accomplishing anything, that's pretty much a worthless use of energy. And I thought about it for a minute, and I thought about all the organizations out there. And they all talk to each other, but there isn't a single organization that has a realistic education policy to reach out to the public. And not long after that, I had been working real hard, doing radio and TV interviews to try and help my friends in California pass Prop 19, full legalization. And when 19 was defeated, and I knew it was so important to get that first state to legalize, when that was defeated, I was really heartbroken. And I knew that once that happened, the rage would start out in California. I warned people. I mean, I know the government. I spent 30 years in prison studying the subject. And of course, as soon as Prop 19 went down the drain, the government started raiding California dispensaries and growers where they hadn't been before. But I looked at the exit polls, and I saw that there was only one single reason that 19 was defeated by that small margin. And that was the senior vote. Seniors voted 65% against. And that's my generation. We invented marijuana as it's known today. We made marijuana popular and available. I couldn't imagine how that happened. And as I looked into it, I saw that nobody was speaking to seniors. Even out in California, that had had medical marijuana for so long, most seniors had no idea that it was a real medicine. I mean, no idea at all, even in a state like California. So I decided that that would be a niche, a place to start. And I formed The Silver Tour. It's a nonprofit corporation that its main aim is to teach seniors the benefits of medical marijuana. And of course, if you're teaching seniors, you're teaching everybody else. And reaching the mainstream, especially with television, is something I know how to do. So first, I put on one live show after another. In the beginning, it was hard to even find a senior community that would let me come and put on a show about marijuana. But once I put on the first show, I think it was CNN who came to cover it, see what was going on. They did a tremendous feature story with a lot of video, and that began to open the door. The next show I did was in a Reform synagogue. Now, the Reform movement in Judaism has supported medical marijuana for 10 years, but they never had a spokesman. It turns out synagogues all over the country opened their doors and begged me to come in and put on a Silver Tour show. And at a Silver Tour show, besides having the pleasure of listening to me speak, I bring a doctor who explains the endocannabinoid system and all the things that marijuana can be used to treat. I bring a nurse, patients who tell people their own experience, most of whom were never smokers before they found they needed it medically. And then I bring a lawyer who tells them how to change the laws in their state, what they have to do, how to lobby, how to write petitions. And the next show I did was featured on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. And that opened even more doors. As you know, last December I was on The Daily Show. They did a big feature segment called Old Tokes Home. It was hysterical. And you know, everybody said, no, don't do it. They're going to make fun of a serious subject. Of course, I knew different. I knew that they can only use what you present. And I also knew that virtually everybody involved in John Stewart's Daily Show was ahead. So that was great. That made millions and millions of seniors comfortable with a subject that they would not discuss before. Seniors living in conservative areas like I do were now willing to talk about marijuana. They could talk about The Daily Show or the article in the New York Times or the front page of the Wall Street Journal. That was a neighbor of yours in Ohio trying to get me, an activist in Ohio. In any case, the Silver Tour really took off, and I had more invitations for shows than I could possibly fill. And it costs money to put on a show. And it takes a lot of time arranging. And right about at that time when I was thinking of putting the Silver Tour on TV, which is what I do best, I had just come back last year from Patients Out of Time, their medical conference in Arizona. They have it once every 2 years where doctors come from all over the world and researchers. I had just come back, and prior to that, I had a pretty good PO, good parole officer. And he knew I had to travel to make a living, that I earned my personal living from doing book signings and speaking engagements and media appearances. And he was a terrific guy, never gave me a problem. He used to say to me, Bobby, just let me know where you're going when you get back. When I got home, I get a call from a man by the name of Scott Kersey. And he said, I'm your new PO. I said, whoops, wait a minute. Well, my parole officer, Anthony Gagliardi, who was a terrific guy, was on sick leave and in the hospital. He had what turned out to be a terminal disease. And when this new guy shows up at my door, the first thing he says is cancel all your travel arrangements. And I said, Scott, I can't make a living if I can't travel. I said, I've got to go out and sell Black Tuna Diaries and make appearances for the movie Square Grouper and earn some speaking fees. I said, I can't live on my $700 a month Social Security. You know, anyone who's been in jail for a long time doesn't get much Social Security. And he said, that's your problem. So I knew I had a problem. And that finally convinced me that it was time to put the Silver Tour show on television. So I produced a program called should grandma smoke pot? And it's made a big difference in a lot of cities. I run it like an infomercial. I buy the television time in half hour. It's a half hour show and put it on the air, and it's supported by donations. We've run in about 7 or 8 cities on a dozen different TV stations. We've been on 4 different stations in Florida. And we usually run for 1 to 2 months because, like an infomercial, running it once doesn't do a hell of a lot of good. Today, there are so many TV stations and the audience is split in so many small pieces that you have to show it over and over and over again. And you keep picking up more audience, different audience, so that at the end of a month, you've at least made an impression on an area, a measurable impression. I'm looking at a schedule now in Minnesota. There's a donor in Minnesota who's willing to put up enough money to run it for 2 months on 2 different stations in Minnesota. I buy TV time at special infomercial rates. I don't pay Ratebook or what an advertising agency would pay. It's a private auction process. And I get time as cheap as $50 for a half hour on late night or overnight, 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning. Early morning, 6, 6:30, might be $100, $150 for a half hour. That's reaching an awful lot of people for pennies. There are normal chapters and organizations that spend more than that to table at a flea market or an event. And, maybe they'll get to talk to 2 or 3 dozen people in the course of an evening. One of my shows speaks to 10, 15,000 people at a time. And if you run it 10 times, you've spoken to a lot of people who speak to a lot of other people. And it makes an impression. If you've seen Should Grandma Smoke Pot, especially the new version, 2013, you know how impactful it is.
Yes, I have seen it. It's amazing. And everybody needs to see this. I think it's a great way to educate seniors without being intimidating.
It's actually had such great reaction. One of my best stations that brought in the most donations to keep it running was in Tampa, Florida. And Tampa is the home of DARE, Drug-Free America, SOS. I mean, that's all the Semblers and Calvina Faye. All those organizations are the same people. But their home is Tampa. And I run it for 1 month in Tampa twice. And the station gets nothing but great letters, phone calls saying, thank you so much for running this show. And it's a Hearst station. And Hearst has cleared Grandma to run on all of their stations all over the country. And the head counsel at Hearst, who had to clear the show, said it is the classiest, most entertaining issue show he has ever seen. And when I ran out of money and had to take it off the air in Tampa, their national rep called me and said, Bobby, we'll work with you any way we can. The people at the station and the people in Tampa really love that show, and we'd love to keep it on the air. Unfortunately, when you don't have any money, that's that. There's not much conversation left. So right now, it's only running in areas where donors are willing to pay for it. A couple of $1,000 can make an awfully big difference in a campaign to legalize cannabis in places like Arkansas, places that have it on the ballot, places like Ohio that need some help. And there's a lot of wealthy people in Ohio who should be kicking in for this.
So then people are hearing this interview and they realize that we need to have this in Ohio. How can they donate?
Right at the website, thesilvertour.org. Thesilvertour.org, up in the right-hand corner, is a donate button. And we're much appreciated. We're very much in need. And that money, there are no paid salaries in the Silver Tour. Nobody gets paid, not even me, unfortunately. I had visions that there'd be a lot of money to support it. Maybe one day, like other CEOs, I could draw a salary, but that's not even in the cards at the moment. The money goes to pay expenses and buy the TV time. Every time we put it on a station, we usually make a version for that area that has the name and website of the local initiative, whether it's a petition and the organization running the petition. We put that on, and then we have to redo the closed captioning for the hearing impaired. So it costs between $250 and $500 to make a master for each state as it's needed. But that's still relatively little bucks for an awfully big return. And aside from that, I'm writing a new book called Greed and Evil. And this book exposes people like the Semblers and Calvina Faye, the entire modern era of the anti-marijuana movement, beginning with Richard Nixon, and going up through all the people today who are fighting so hard. It exposes who their backers are, how much they're making out of it. One of the biggest sections in the new book is going to be on private prisons. Our private prisons have written the sentencing laws for the past 15 years through an organization called ALEC. And lo and behold, who's behind ALEC? The Koch brothers. Koch brothers.
I think you had it right the first time.
and I trace the money trail and how much they're putting into the campaign funds from the candidates who still support prohibition. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that's never seen the light of day before about the Semblers, about private prisons. Of course, I've got a lot of prison experience. But we're losing more jobs right now to private prisons and the prison industries than we are to China and Pakistan put together. Prison industries rely on, more than anything else, cannabis offenders to work in their factories, because they're the most docile, the most cooperative. They just want to do their time and go home. And so they're the first ones drafted into the factories. The prisons don't want bank robbers, gangsters, people that'll cause them trouble. They usually send them right back to the government prisons. But cannabis offenders is what they're fighting hard to get. And those are the people we have to realize are really the enemy. It's no longer the pharmaceutical industry. The pharmaceutical industry has known for a long time that they're going to have to go back in the business of making cannabis medicines as they were before. Only now they can make a lot of money out of it. Medicines like Nabilone is incredibly expensive. And today, the pharmaceutical industry isn't really the people who are fighting us, because they want to get in on it. Now they want the patents, the research grants. They're looking at the future. But the private prison industry, which made something like $50 billion last year, is fighting tooth and nail, because if you took all the pot offenders out of the private prisons, and out of the prison factories. The prisons wouldn't have enough people in there to pay their expenses, and they wouldn't have anybody in the factories to make the products. You know, a lot of big companies are having their products manufactured in prison, and they're being made by marijuana offenders primarily. It used to be if you picked up the phone to call for help or a complaint or an airline ticket, you spoke to somebody in India. Today, when you pick up the phone to make a call to a company, you're talking to somebody in prison. All of those phone rooms have moved back to the United States, and 90% of them are now in prisons. We've got to change it. We've got to end it. So you have to know who the enemy is and how they benefit. And you have to use that to embarrass our politicians into changing their policy. So I'm not writing this book for activists, although I know activists will buy it. In fact, there's been a tremendous pre-sale. In order to have money to do the book, I offered it for pre-sale on a GoFundMe. And a lot of people have ordered it. Probably every well-known activist. You can go to the GoFundMe page and you'll see name after familiar name of people who've already ordered the book, and I'm only on chapter 4 now, writing it. But in order to be able to stay home and write it, I had to raise money, and the GoFundMe is paying for that and will actually pay, provided enough money comes in, for the publication. One way or another, the book will be out, probably in time to give it as a gift for Christmas, at least for the people who pre-order it. They come first. And that's about it with me. Now we're up to date. I've asked the government for permission to travel to Colorado at the end of this month for Nathan Edelman's seminars that they're running, the workshops they're running there. I doubt they'll give me permission, but I may get to go. As you may know, I took 150 seniors to Washington to lobby for medical marijuana, specifically to lobby to stop the federal government from interfering in the states that have legalized. And it was the first time they ever saw seniors asking for marijuana as opposed to students. And it made a hell of an impression because Eric Holder announced that they weren't going to enforce in the legal states as long as they met 8 guidelines. And the guidelines are very reasonable. And of course, the bill that we were supporting, which was put in by Jared Polis, the congressman from Colorado and Republican congressman, that bill is now has had a hearing already. The hearings were televised. So I think the Silver Tours made one hell of a difference in bringing seniors into the conversation. Seniors vote. And that's the key. And that's about it.
I have one last question. Since marijuana has caused so much turmoil in your life, why are you spending your retirement years educating people about the positive benefits it has to offer instead of just going back to your stress-free job of selling Vitamix blenders?
That's not so stress-free. But no, this has caused plenty of problems and gotten more attention than I'd like to have from the government. But somebody's got to do it. And there's no mainstream face for marijuana. And so I decided to become that because there are tens of thousands of Americans in prison. And you see appeals on Facebook and in the social media every day. Help this one, help that one. Please get my dad out of jail. And you see appeals, help me get my kids back. Help my uncle. Help this one, help that one. And very honestly, it's only splitting up our resources as badly as we want to help everyone, instead of pooling our resources to do something that'll help everyone. And we're not talking, you know, 10 years down the road, because things are changing very quickly. And now is when we need to increase the pressure and increase the pressure. And I think I can help everybody get out of jail. I think I can help every parent get their kids back by changing the law. And it's just something I feel compelled to do. Maybe that's my get backs for all the years I spent in prison. I suspect it is. In that sense, I'm a somewhat vengeful person. And by changing the law every time I help a city decriminalize or a county decide not to enforce their marijuana laws, and I've done that in a lot of counties and cities and townships, I feel great. Even though it's only a little win, it's just another piece and another piece and another piece. And pretty soon we're going to have the whole ball of wax. And that's the way I feel about it.
Well, I can't think of a more positive direction to direct your vengeance. I love your documentary, the work that you're doing, and you definitely have my support. And I'm hoping to see Your Grandma Smokes Pot here in Ohio.
Me too, and I'll look for your help in getting that together.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Platschern, for hashing it out with me today.
Jane, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure and a delight speaking with you. You're a lovely person. Take care.
Touch my bags if you please, Mr. Customs Man. Yeah, there's a guy with a ticket to Mexico. No, he couldn't look much stranger. Walking in a hall with his things and all. Smiling, said he was the Lone Ranger. Coming into Los Angeles. Bringing in a couple of keys. Touch my bags if you please, Mr. Customs Man.
For more information about topics and people discussed in this episode, visit my blog at hashitoutwithjoni.blogspot.com. If you have any comments, questions, or you just want to tell me how amazing I am, send me an email at hashitoutwithjoni@gmail.com.